And now, will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditation of each and every one of our hearts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Diane Butler Bass still remembers that day clear as a bell. It was a fall day, very much like this one, when she walked to her mailbox. And there, spilling out amidst all of the solicitations and magazines that clogged her mailbox, was a soft, almost like velvet envelope. It was deep red, like the color of cranberry. It was the kind of thing that you just couldn't wait to open. Inside, she said, was an equally stunning card with but one word on the cover: gratitude. Opening that card, she read in beautiful flowing script the following: Dear Diana, thank you so much for your lovely thank you note. She said she read it again to make sure that she had gotten it right. And then she went into that place of panic that comes out of a rule of living in a structure of mismanners and proper etiquette, and where gifts are a commodity to be responded to. She said, what do you do next? You send a thank you note for the thank you note you received for sending a thank you note. Where, she wonders, does this end? But that is actually part of the question, isn't it? Where does this idea, not just of thanking, not just of notes in velvet envelopes, but where does this notion of gratitude end? For nine of them, it ended in their healing, their physical being made well. And they scurried off to resume their lives, to clutch their families, and as I said to the kids, quite frankly, who can blame them, right? You need to know, for the 10 lepers, it had been a life of exile and isolation. To be a leper at that time was confined to live outside of the village. It was confined to live alone with fellow lepers. They shouted at Jesus not because they were rude or impolite or interrupting. They were shouting at Jesus because the rule said they could not get within speaking distance of anyone. Confined to a life outside, literally and figuratively too. So you can't blame any of them for wanting to run to get back inside and to resume their living. But one of them, and here's the critical part, one of them lingered. One of them, the Bible tells us, turned. Turned to dwell in the moment, to fall at the feet of Jesus, to simply be grateful, to linger. For as the French proverb goes, gratitude is the memory of the heart. But what the Bible and science too tells us is that gratitude is not just a backward-looking thing. More than anything, it shapes how we look at the future, how we live into that future. Gratitude, you see, is not just about memory, it's about possibility. In our world, sometimes thank yous are part of convention, part of quid pro quo. Someone gives you something, and you're obligated to respond. It runs the risk of creating an economy, a currency, of where we are always indebted. Think about ancient times, when a great benefactor would hold his people under his thumb by giving them small things and expecting big things in return. But the Bible, like so many things, throws all of our world's conventions upside down. gratitude, when you encounter it in the Bible, isn't an obligation to anyone. Even, and perhaps especially, never an obligation to God. Instead, it's an orientation. It's a practice. It's an attitude. Karl Barth writes that gratitude is tightly interwoven with this idea of grace. Grace being what we are given thoroughly unmerited. It's when somebody who owes us nothing instead gives us everything. And Barth says a life of living in gratitude is inextricably bound to the idea of grace. He says this: grace and gratitude belong together like heaven and earth. Grace evokes gratitude like the voice of an echo. Gratitude follows grace like thunder, lightning. This thing about gratitude is it doesn't fit within the neatly constrained barriers of anything. Instead, it is transcendent. It is subversive. It is alternative. It is life-giving. It is thoroughly emotional. And perhaps most importantly, this thing about gratitude is that it often is thoroughly unplanned. Think about that moment in your life where you experienced grace, either from an act of God or from one of your neighbors, something so overwhelming, something so unthought of, that in your heart, you just felt this space of profound gratitude that cannot be described. You see, the Bible knows this. We don't calculate or pick out gratitude. Instead, we live into it. Dietrich Bonhoeffer reflects the emergence of the radical truth that we always in our lives receive infinitely more than we can ever give. And he says that not to make us feel guilty or compel us to do anything, but rather to recognize the myriad of gifts that come our way every day that often have nothing to do with what we've done. Here in New England and here in the United States of America, we like to be individualists. We like to accomplish things. We like to be recognized for what we do. And yet in the Bible, this concept of gratitude flows out of grace. Something given, never earned. In this stewardship season, as we contemplate this way of Jesus, as we contemplate what we give back, first and foremost, let go of what you owe or what you're obligated to. Instead, see the abundance of blessings all around you and simply participate in that abundance of blessing. Many of you know that my favorite hymn in all of hymnody is "Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing." I begged Tracy to change our middle hymn to sing it after writing this sermon, and she said, "Of course, I love it." It is for me my favorite hymn because I think it captures, perhaps better than any other for me, the fullness of our faith experience, the way I understand faith to sprout and then grow and then blossom, the idea of blessings flowing down on us, and the fact that I still wander. The idea of streams of mercy poured out extravagantly, resulting in endless praise coming from our lips, of finding the mount and fixing our gaze upon it. But it is in the second verse of that hymn that I think is the whole key to moving from obligated thank yous to really this life of gratitude. That's the one where you're going to sing "The Name of My Stone." You've sung it, I bet, a dozen times. "Here I raise my Ebenezer," trusting, I'm sure, that everyone else knew exactly what that word meant, even if you didn't. In the New Century hymnal, they get nervous sometimes about such things, so they took out the word Ebenezer, not thinking that we would know what it meant. Here's what they wrote: "Here I pause in my sojourning, giving thanks for having come. Come to trust at every turning, you will guide me safely home." The key moment in this story is not the prayer at Jesus' feet. It's not him then eventually going home. Notice Jesus doesn't command him to do anything, simply says, "Go home." The key moment in this story is when he turns and when he pauses. And that is when gratitude can sprout in our lives. As I mentioned, one of the things I love about this children's image that you couldn't quite see on the screen is that in the very simplest of pictures, his face was amazed. His face didn't understand what had just happened to him, and he sat there figuring it out. Diana Butler Ross raises this story. Do you remember the story of the Magi, the story for Epiphany? She has one of the most brilliant interpretations I've ever read. I'm not going to be here this Epiphany Sunday, so I'm going to cheat and tell you it now. Here's what she says, a story that I have no doubt she told her son Jesus over and over again until he took it into his heart. The fact that when those magi came, those kings coming to the lowly stable, bringing those gifts of great magnitude, they were so beyond the pale. There was nothing she could possibly do to respond to them. There was no way she could ever repay the debt of what they were giving her. And they were leaving, and she had no forwarding address to even send a thank you card. And so as a result, if you remember the Gospel of Luke, Mary pondered it. She brought it into her heart, the Bible says. And there, Butler Bass writes, she found gratitude because there was nothing she could do about this gift except for simply take it in and love it and live it. There is no commodity being exchanged here, nothing that we have earned that we have to pay back. A thing simply to ponder. For gratitude, you see, is an emotion. It's a thing of the heart, something that not just emerges from the heart, but something that strengthens the heart, something that enriches the heart. Are you ready for this? Physiological research maintains that those for whom they live their lives in a grateful and gratitude-filled way, their heart rate is actually lower. Their anxiety levels are far lower. They find pleasure in much smaller things. And you ready for this? Grateful people statistically live longer, much longer. Psychological research like that done by Robert Emmons shows that gratitude, when you have gratitude in your heart, it drives out those toxic emotions of resentment, anger, and envy. There are none of those emotions around our times these days, are there? And sociological research like David DeSteno's from Northeastern University finds that when incorporated into a practice of living, being grateful increases our resilience, and it's a springboard for life that ever searches for deeper meaning. Isn't that the invitation Jesus gives us in this way of his? Turns out that some of the people who are most profoundly grateful in their living are those who, through some trauma or diagnosis, are forced to pause, to consider, and to contemplate. In my own work and experience, I will tell you this, that when I work with people who are facing the end of their lives, the emotion I find more than any other is a sense of gratitude. While I was in the woods this last week, I had a chance to talk to my stepmother. Things are not going biologically very well. They had gone up to their cabin in Door County, and my stepmother had forgotten to bring her morphine pills. And, well, going to a Walgreens to get morphine pills is not the easiest thing in the world. So she was stuck there for a couple of days in significant pain and unable to move. So you know what she did? She sat in front of the great big picture window, and she looked out in northern Wisconsin, and she said, "Brent, I swear to you, in those 2 days, I saw the leaves turn. I saw them actually change in their shade of color. I saw the leaves turn. I have never in my life actually seen leaves turn. I have taken them for granted. And yet, because of this, I got to see something I haven't seen in my 70 years of living." Make no mistake about it. She would do anything not to face the future she has. But in the midst of this moment where she is forced to slow down and to pause, she is discovering great joys. She said to me something I've never heard her say. "Brent, I find the greatest pleasure simply in sitting next to your dad and holding his hand." Turns out that sometimes to find this life of gratitude, we need an external impetus. There's the story of Elie Wiesel, a famous survivor of the concentration camps in Europe, who survived years of suffering and pondering. This is what she came to know. Every hour is grace. She feels gratitude in her heart each time she meets someone and looks at his or her smile. Neither of these people would say that their gratitude suddenly erases the hardship they find. In fact, sometimes a life of gratitude, research shows us, increases the difficulty of the suffering because we come to appreciate this fragile, delicate thing of life. You see, the definition of gratitude is simply so appreciating that the true gift is life and connection. That is what we do when we come in church. We create this safe place for people to explore the fullness of their life in the safety of community so that in and through and by one another, we can see the gifts that are all just around us that we so seldom slow down to even see. A continually expanding circle of grace and gift. If you read the Bible, there are these targeted miracle stories that grace seems to fall on just a few people. And it's easy to think, why not me? But that's not gratitude. Gratitude is realizing how many times grace falls on all of us. Think about these other stories in the Bible. In the Gospel of John, Jesus' first miracle is lavishing drunken wedding guests with 140 gallons of wine, a gift poured out for everybody. Jesus talks all the time about throwing seeds indiscriminately on the ground that they might just simply sprout and grow. There are invitations in every single gospel for the unnamed poor simply to come to dinner. There are parties thrown in Luke's gospel for that wayward son who disappeared and came home. And in all the gospels, there is that story of thousands showing up and Jesus feeding every single one of them. Grace abounds. It's there if we just stop and look at it. So how do we do it? Two quick things. First, do what he did. Whatever you're doing on this merry-go-round or treadmill of life, stop, even if for just one moment. And then do what he did, which is simply pray. There's an amazing woman, Phyllis Tickle, who passed away recently, a great woman of faith. She had a practice of what she calls praying the hours, that virtually every hour of the day, she would pause to say a very short prayer. She was a distinguished faculty member and would go to many meetings, and she would always sit next to the door. Because if that meeting ran over one of her prayer times, she would simply get up without saying anything, slip out for her very short prayer that reminded her who she was and to whom she belonged and the fact that grace abounds, and she would come back in the meeting, and those people didn't even notice she was gone, but Phyllis will tell you she noticed profoundly how her life changed, saying over and over and over. This is going to bother you. Grace is not, or gratitude is not something you can pursue doggedly. It is not something you can have a plan for. It is not something that you work at. Instead, what research shows is that people who are grateful practice this thing called turning. Just simply recognizing the invitation is there and opening yourself up to see the grace that abounds. Gratitude, a way of walking with Jesus, emerging not as a choice or an obligation, but rather a turning, a reply, an invitation. Which is why on this Sunday, like so many Sundays, we're going to say, "Come, thou fount of every blessing, tune my heart to sing your praise." Will you stand and sing?